February 10th, when they wander back. In one of the most famous parables in the Bible, Jesus tells of the prodigal son. There was once a wealthy man who had two sons, Jesus says. The younger one said to him, "Father, give me my share of the estate now." The boy took his share, sold it, and fled with the money. He traveled, gambled, partied, drank, ate like a king, and within a week he'd spent everything. He found work on a farm feeding pigs. He couldn't afford food, so he ate what the pigs ate. Finally, it occurred to him that back home, even his father's servants ate in abundance. So he set out for home, intent on confessing to his father, "I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired workers," he said. Before the boy could own up to what he had done, Jesus explains, his father called to his servants, "Hurry, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. Then go and get the prize calf and kill it, and let us celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead, but now he is alive. He was lost, but now he has been found." Your kids may never demand their share of the estate, but they will stray. They will act out. They will try to establish their independence. They will get themselves in trouble. As parents, we have to accept that and accept them all the same. We have to take them back. We have to give them what they need. And when they wander back, we have to make sure they are always met not with reproach or "I told you so," but with affection and understanding. February 11th, there's a reason you're so raw.
There really are places in the heart you don't even know exist until you love a child. Anne Lamott.
In times that seem to bring out people's worst, parents feel something different. We're raw. We're vulnerable. We tear up when we hear about the loss of a loved one. We feel it in our gut when we think about families struggling to make ends meet. Those viral videos hit us differently. The step-parents, gifted adoption papers, the military parent surprising their child with an unexpected visit home, the families reunited at the border. It's like instant waterworks. Why is that? You're raw because having kids has opened you up. "I wasn't emotionally prepared for parenthood," the comedian and author Michael Ian Black writes, after spending the 30 previous years in a cauterized emotional state. Parenthood forces you to engage the world in a more active way. It forces you to engage with yourself and your own emotions in an active way. Was it easier to go through the world closed off and cynical? Is there something tribal and reassuring about focusing on yourself and your problems and placing the blame for those things elsewhere on those other people? Of course. But that's less and less possible these days. This parenting thing has changed you. It's made you see that it's all connected, that we're all connected. It has made you better. February 12th. Love the kid you have.
You are a very special person. There is only one like you in the whole world. Mr. Rogers.
The grade school teacher, best-selling author, and mom of two, Jessica Leahy, has talked to hundreds of thousands of kids about the things they want their parents to hear. By far the number one comment I get, she says, is some version of, "I am not my brother. I am not my sister. I am not my parents when they are my age. I don't know who my parents think they're raising, but it's not me. My parents think they know who I am, but it's all their expectations of me. They have no idea who I actually am." Isn't that heartbreaking? If there were a list of things you never wanted your kids to think or feel, those responses, which Jessica says get emailed to her almost every day, are probably right at the top the list. No kid should feel like their dad wants them to be someone else, to be something different. No kid should feel like they are a disappointment. They should know that they are special for who they are, that they make the world and your life better just by being in it. Your kids need to be seen. They need to be heard. They need to be loved. They need to be known for who they are, for what they choose to be, not for who or what you want them to become. That's all they really want from us. And they deserve to have it. So you better give it to them, starting today and for the rest of their lives. February 13th. you can always give them this.
A person becomes happy to the same extent to which he or she gives happiness to other people. Jeremy Bentham.
You want to give them the world, or at least their own room and whatever material things they need. You want nothing more than to make them perfectly happy. But inevitably, you'll come up short. That's the bad news. The good news is that there are some things you can always give them that when others try to offer them up to your kids, will never measure up to yours. These are things that are always possible to give, always within your reach, your attention, your understanding, and your love. No matter what happens, no matter how rich or poor you are, no matter what mistakes you make or they make, no matter how powerful or powerless you are, you can always give them those things. In fact, you must always give them, because in the end, those are more important than all the other things you can and will do for them. Love and understanding, especially, are the only things that truly matter because they last even beyond your death. Their impact is going to be one of the primary forces that shape the adult your child becomes. And if you think about it, the only thing they'll truly and rightfully resent you for, all else being equal, is if you know these things are true and you still fail to provide them. February 14th, the greatest thing you can do. In The Second Mountain, David Brooks relates a conversation he had with an academic friend. "I don't really know of many happy marriages," the friend said. "I know a lot of marriages where parents love their kids." In such a marriage, your son or daughter misses out on a powerful example. One of the greatest things a father can do for his children, Howard W. Hunter once said, is to love their mother. Our notion of what a family is has expanded since he made that remark. We have single families. We have divorced families. We have trans families. We have blended families and co-parenting families. We have gay families and even poly families, to each their own. But the truth of the sentiment doesn't change. In fact, it only expands. The best thing you can do for your kids is love the person who brought them into this world. The best thing you can do for your kids is love the person you are parenting them with, even if you are no longer with that person, even if that person has deeply hurt or even betrayed you. You must love the person responsible for a good chunk of your kid's DNA or identity. You must love who your children love. That's how they'll know that they are loved. February 15th. This is what they want most. Eleanor Roosevelt had a rough childhood. Her mother was always difficult and judgmental, but she was still her mother, and Eleanor was devastated when she died at age 29, then devastated again just months later when her father died. She was sent to live with her grandmother, a woman who, it quickly became clear, was the source of Eleanor's mother's emotional issues and judgmentalness. It was a dreary, painful existence that didn't change until Eleanor was sent to school in London. There, at a special school for girls, she met a teacher who finally saw in Eleanor not a plain, shy girl, but someone special with talent, with ambitions, with the ability to make a difference in the world. Attention and admiration were the things throughout all my childhood that I wanted most, Eleanor later reflected, because I was made to feel so conscious of the fact that nothing about me would attract attention or bring me admiration. Don't we ourselves want attention and admiration in our jobs, in our communities, in our marriages? Why wouldn't our kids want the same things in their young and fragile lives? And who could it possibly be more meaningful to come from than us? It's hard to be a kid. They're overwhelmed. They doubt themselves. They wonder where they fit in, whether they matter. It's our job to help them with this, to let them know that they are loved, that they are special, that they are enough, to give them the attention and admiration they deserve. February 16th. Keep the main thing the main thing.
Most of what we say and do is not essential. If you can eliminate it, you'll have more time and more tranquility. Ask yourself at every moment, is this necessary? Marcus Aurelius.
There's a wonderful little expression, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Every family, every person has a different main thing, of course, but If we could generalize, the main thing for us parents is to raise well-adjusted, self-reliant, decent, happy kids. The main thing is not college. The main thing is not making partner at our law firm. The main thing is to not have a clean house. The main thing is not to win some competition with other parents. The main thing is not grades. It is not following in your footsteps. It's not being captain of the football team or an expert cello player. The main thing is for them to be healthy, to be prepared for life, to have good values, to have a good sense of who they are, what they want to spend their life doing. The main thing is to love them and for them to feel loved. February 17th. Let them wonder if you know. As a young boxer trying to make it on his own for the first time, future heavyweight champion Floyd Patterson would find himself so hungry that he had no choice but to head over to his mother's house late at night. "Don't tell Mom we're hungry," he told the friend who was with him. "I don't want her to know that I haven't been able to manage on what I've been making." But no sooner had Floyd said hello than his mother was making him a snack. "Don't bother, Mom," he said, trying to play it cool. "We just had a big meal tonight at a restaurant and couldn't take another bite." "Just a snack," his mother insisted before serving an enormous meal. "I kept wondering if my mother knew this wasn't just a social call," Floyd would reflect years later in his memoirs, "that I wasn't just eating to be polite." Of course she knew, a parent always does. But she didn't say a word. She just did what she needed to do, caring not only about her son's well-being, but also for his feelings and his pride. When our kids need help, our only job is to provide it. To help, not lecture, to be of service, never to humiliate. This is how you create the kind of relationship Floyd and his mother had, the kind where your kids know they can always come home for help at any time, day or night. February 18th, how to convince them.
The ardor of the young should be curbed slowly, lest by wishing to oppose them with sudden impediments, we drive them to despair and perdition. Giovanni Boccaccio.
In 1941, Mary Churchill accepted the marriage proposal of a young man named Eric Duncannon. She was young and inexperienced. They barely knew each other. A war raged around them. Duncannon was almost certainly not the right fit for her. Naturally, her parents, the heads of a political dynasty in a time of rigid aristocratic marriages, were concerned. But as Eric Larson details in his book, The Splendid and the Vile, instead of condemning her daughter, Clementine Churchill simply asked her daughter if she was certain it was the right choice. She didn't disapprove outright, but she did let her daughter know that she had some doubts. Then, understanding that no daughter wants to be told whom to marry by her parents, Clementine searched for someone whom her daughter trusted and respected, whom she could ask to weigh in independently and casually. She landed on Averell Harriman, one of Churchill's advisors who was dating Mary's sister-in-law. Harriman took the young and impulsive girl aside. "He said all the things I should have told myself," Mary later reflected. "He told her that her whole life was before her and that she should not accept the first person who comes along. 'You have not met many people,' he said. 'To be stupid about one's life is a crime.'" All of this began to sink in with Mary, who then, after a few weeks, decided of her own volition to break off the engagement. It was her idea, but she came later to understand how lucky she was that her parents had helped her get there. "What would have happened had Mummy not intervened?" she wrote. "Thank God for Mummy's sense, understanding, and love." Our kids are going to do stuff we disagree with, but very rarely, especially as they get older, will we be able to convince them of this by force or fiat. We have to be understanding. We have to be patient, maybe even a little sneaky. We have to give them advice and the tools to make sense of that advice, because ultimately they are the ones who have to figure out the right decision for themselves. We have to make sure that no matter what they decide, we love them. February 19th. Assume the best. You have known your kids since they were little. You have seen them do the sweetest things in the entire world. You know who they are. So here's a question. When they screw up, when they fail a test, when they crash their car, when they get in trouble, when they talk back to you, why do you assume the worst? Why do you treat them with anger and judgment? Why do you jump all over them with criticism and frustration or suspicion? You know they are good and decent. You know they generally do their best. You know what they struggle with. You know their fears and vulnerabilities and weaknesses. You know what they have been through. Deep down, you know one of the things they have been through is being raised by you. So why isn't that being reflected in your tone, in your assumptions? Where is the kindness? Where is the good faith? Why aren't you talking to them like someone who believes in them, who is a fan of them? Where is the patience? Where is the charity? Where is the demonstrable unconditionalness that you purport to have for them? That's right. And remember, all of this could be said about your interactions with your spouse too. February 20th, these are the richest kids. Everyone remembers the rich kids growing up. Even rich kids remember the other richer kids. We envied their ski trips, their huge houses, their equally big vacation houses, their electronics, their clothes. And yet how many of those kids, when we look at them now as adults, appear to have actually been quite poor? At home, they faced a poverty of attention, a deficit of happiness or stability. Maybe their parents fought all the time. Maybe they worked constantly. Maybe they played favorites and none were their kids. As adults, we now realize that to be rich is not necessarily to be wealthy, especially as wealth comes in many forms. And this is really good news. All of us have the ability to give our kids a rich life. We can measure wealth in time and attention they get from us by whether they feel safe and secure, whether their house feels like a home, even if we only make $30,000 a year. You can make your kid the richest kid in the whole school without spending a dollar. February 21st, always be their friend. The entrepreneur Ben Horowitz was coached for many years by the legendary Bill Campbell, the so-called trillion-dollar coach, for his work with Larry Page, Steve Jobs, and Sheryl Sandberg. In a eulogy he wrote for Campbell, Horowitz told the story of one of the toughest things he had gone through as a dad and how Campbell had helped him through it. My oldest child, Jules, he writes, concluded he was transgender and was going to change his gender by taking testosterone and having surgery. It's impossible to fully describe how one feels as a parent in a situation like that, but mostly all I felt was worried. Worry that he wouldn't be accepted, worry that his health would fail, worry that the surgery would not go well, worry that he would be killed by some intolerant group. I was so filled with worry that I could barely function, so I decided to tell Bill. When I told him, I could see the tears well up in his eyes, and he said, "That's going to be really hard." And then he immediately wanted to see Jules, and Bill made sure that he embraced Jules and let him know that he was not alone and would always have a friend in Bill. Bill understood. This wonderful public moment about a private struggle, shared in honor of a personal mentor, speaks to the heart of what every child needs to hear from their parents, no matter what they are going through. There are going to be things in your life that are very hard. You are not alone. I'll always be your friend. February 22nd. Tell them they carry this everywhere. In July 2008, the journalist David Carr saw his daughter Erin off to London for her first real job out of college. Erin had struggled in the previous years. She had the beginnings of a drinking problem. She didn't always date the best guys, but she never had to wonder if her father loved her deeply. When Erin landed in London, a letter from her father was waiting in her email inbox. It's the kind of letter a great parent writes, the kind that in David's case, due to his tragic and unexpected death at age 58, would guide his daughter long after he was not around. The letter opens, "Honey, we are so excited for you. Please understand that you carry with you not only our love and our support, but our admiration and pride in your decision to bring your ambitions roaring into the world. Make sure your kids know that no matter what, they are loved, they are supported, they are accepted, they are enough. Make sure they know that no matter where they go, they carry your love and support and pride with them." February 23rd. Teach them early where their value lies.
Young people must be taught from childhood that it is not right to wear gold on their bodies or to possess it, since they have their own personal gold intermixed into their soul, hinting at the virtue that is part of human nature and received at birth. Plutarch.
Mr. Rogers ended every one of his programs with a message directly to kids that became almost a proverb in its wisdom and timeless truth. "You've made this day a special day just by being you," he would say. "There is no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are." We must, as parents, teach our children where their value really lies. It's not in their accomplishments. It's not in what they earn or how they look. It's not to be found in anything external at all. Their value to us and to the world is inherent. It exists because they exist, because there is no one on this planet with their same combination of DNA and experiences and circumstances. That's what makes them special and what makes them rarer than the rarest jewels and more precious than the most precious metals. February 24th, all they want. It's tough to know, what do your kids really need? What must a parent do? What's essential? What's optional? There's no easy answer, but in 2008, President Barack Obama came close to articulating one in a Father's Day speech about what our kids really need and want from us. "Our kids are pretty smart," he said. "They understand that life won't always be perfect, that sometimes the road gets rough, that even great parents don't get everything right. But more than anything, they want us to be part of their lives. In the end, that's what being a parent is all about, those precious moments with our children that fill us with pride and excitement for their future. The chances we have to set an example or offer a piece of advice, the opportunities to just be there and show them that we love them. That's your job above all others, to be part of their life, a positive part. They need you to be there, to give advice, to be a good example, to understand them and love them. Everything else is extra." February 25th. Hit them with one of these. Your kid is running upstairs and you stop them. "Hey, before you go," you're watching TV and your daughter is walking into the other room. "Hey, I need to tell you something." Your boys are wrestling in the backyard and the door opens and you come out. "Hey, guys." They think you're going to remind them about some piece of schoolwork or criticize what they're wearing or tell them to stop roughhousing. No, you're going to hit them with those words we can't say often enough. "I love you." That it catches our kids by surprise when we tell them that we love them. That we just want to put our feelings about them out there in the open just so they know and they're confused by it. That's our fault, not theirs. It says something about us, not them. And it's something we, not they, have to fix. February 26th. This is what you'll wish. Johnny Gunther was the pride and joy of two loving parents, a brilliant young boy, fun and funny, headed for Harvard. And then suddenly there was a diagnosis, then a 15-month battle with a brain tumor, and ultimately a life that ended too soon. At the end of Death Be Not Proud, a moving memoir by John Gunther about his son Johnny's short life, John's wife, Frances, reflects on the loss of her son. "What is left?" she asks. "What does a person think and feel looking back on the all too brief a time they had with their child?" "I wish we had loved Johnny more," she said. That was it. That's what she kept coming back to. It's not that they didn't love him. No one can read the Gunther's memoir and not be struck by what a wonderful family they were. It's that when everything is stripped away, all Frances could think of were the opportunities she could have seized to appreciate him and their time more. Let us hope that we never have to experience such a loss. No parent should ever have to bury a child. But still, let's try to think about the end of our own time here on Earth. What will we think then? When we are reflecting on our lives, what will we wish for? We'll wish we had loved them more. Even if we told them 1,000 times in 1,000 ways every single day, We'll think about how woefully short we came up in expressing just how much our kids mean to us. So let us try right now, while we still can, to love them more. February 27th. Give them this while you can.
Future love does not exist. Love is a present activity only. Leo Tolstoy.
The poet William Stafford had some beautiful, thoughtful insights about parenting, but his final insight was best. When Stafford fell dead of a heart attack at age 79, his wife and children found on his desk a piece of paper with a short phrase on it. Perhaps the very last words he wrote in a 50-year career. It was simply, "And all my love." Now, love was not a word that Stafford used much. It might not be one that you're comfortable with using much either, but you should, while you can, while you're still here. And don't just say it, give it. Your kids, your family, your loved ones, they deserve that. All your love. February 28th, love is not a victory march.
Life is warfare and a journey far from home. Marcus Aurelius.
Leonard Cohen, who had two kids, said that love is not a victory march. It is a cold and a broken hallelujah. The point here is not to discourage you about being a parent. You already bought your ticket and now you're on the ride. It's just a reminder, if you go around expecting this to be an unending series of Hallmark moments, you're fooling yourself and setting yourself up for disappointment. If you're comparing how you're doing with what you see on television, you're being unfair to yourself. This thing is hard, really hard. There are dark moments. There are moments when you are convinced that you have no idea what you're doing and you think you are the absolute worst. There are moments when you'll be told that you are, in fact, the worst. But you have to keep going. You can't give up. You can't despair. They're counting on you. February 29th. Take the second chances when you get them. You didn't exactly jump out of bed with joy when your daughter came rushing in at 5 a.m. to play. You didn't give your teenage son much of an opportunity to explain himself about his grades. You were distracted at dinner, checking your phone constantly. There's no way around it. You screwed up. You weren't your best. There's no way to change that. But the one thing about parenting is that it gives you second chances. It gives you a lot of leap days. Kids forget. They need you for something else. There are lots of tough conversations. Dinner happens every night. While you cannot undo what has been done, you can choose to take these second chances as they come. You can will yourself to play even though you're exhausted. You can stop yourself before getting upset this time, reminding yourself that you love the boy and that he's still figuring things out. You can put the phone in the drawer and actually be there for the family meal. We don't get to do this forever. Tomorrow is never guaranteed. Today is a gift, a fluke, especially on a leap year. That's why each interaction we have with our kids matters, why we can't take it for granted. Still, we're not going to get it right every time. So when we're lucky enough to get another go, we better take advantage of it. We better try harder. We better show up. March. Put your family first. Work, family, scene. Pick two. March 1st. You can only pick two.
There isn't time enough, my friends. Though dawn begins, yet midnight ends. To find the time to have love, work, and friends. Kenneth Koch.
The prolific artist and father of two, Austin Kleon, was asked how he makes time for it all. "I don't," he said. "The artist's life is about trade-offs." Then he added a little rule that we should all keep with us always. Work, family, scene. Pick two. You can party it up and hang on to a relationship, but you won't have much time left for work. You can grind away at your craft, be the toast of the scene, but what will that leave for your family? If you are as committed to the work as you are to a happy home, you will have no room for anything else. It would be wonderful if you could have the run of all of these things all the time, but you can't. Being a parent is about making trade-offs. From the very second our kids enter this world, it's their needs versus our wants. At first, it can be a shock to the system, but once we know what to say no to and we know why, we can say yes with comfort and confidence to the things that matter, to the things that last. March 2nd, everything but this is temporary.
When you are a narcissist, mama takes the kids away from you. When you are a narcissist, things start to just go away. Shaquille O'Neal.
Charles de Gaulle helped save France, then he ran it. Yet even at the height of his power, he tried always to remind himself, the presidency is temporary, family is permanent. Accordingly, he put up boundaries between his personal and professional lives. He carved out private time, and he refused to neglect the children who depended on him so much, particularly his mentally disabled daughter, Anne. We can never let ourselves forget we may be very important to the world, but to a small group of people to whom we are related, we are the whole world. Nothing matters more than family, and nothing is more permanent until it isn't. You can lose family. You can break your family. You can drive your family away. And then it is their loss that becomes permanent. By all means, pursue your success. Realize your ambition. Just make sure it's not coming at the expense of what actually matters. March 3rd, you are not a babysitter. The late ESPN broadcaster and father of two girls, Stuart Scott, was once sitting in a restaurant with some friends and their respective children. It was one of those delightful, idyllic scenes. Everyone was having fun. The kids were behaving. The dads were present. Everyone was bonding. All was well. Then a well-meaning mom walked by and, recognizing Scott, tried to pay him a compliment for babysitting the kids. She did not realize how insulting this was to Scott and, in fact, all fathers, because dads can't babysit their kids. Babysitting is something somebody else does for your children on your behalf, usually for money. By definition, the babysitter is not the child's parent. These were Scott's kids. He couldn't babysit on his own behalf, even if he wanted to. It'd be like calling a homeowner a security guard every time you see them lock their own front door. Scott was doing his job. He was being a dad. No more, but certainly no less. As his friend would observe after Scott's tragic death from cancer, we didn't see ourselves as an occasional parental figure who might take the kid off their mom's hands for a couple hours. See what you do as important, because it is. March 4th, you have to make adjustments. Queen Elizabeth II's father, King George VI, met with his prime minister, Winston Churchill, every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. So you might think that when his daughter took over in 1952, she would have continued the tradition. Elizabeth was, after all, a traditionalist. But she didn't. At that time, Queen Elizabeth had two young children, and every parent knows that 5:30 p.m. is dinner time, knocking on bedtime. To avoid the painful question of why isn't mommy going to play with us tonight, her biographer writes, Queen Elizabeth moved the audience to 6:30, which allowed her to go to the nursery to join the children in their nightly bath and tuck them into bed before discussing matters of state with Winston Churchill. The point is, whatever your children's ages are, you have to be ready to make adjustments. Whatever your job is, it can and must be adjusted around what we all know is our most important job. If the Queen can put off Winston Churchill for an hour, you can reschedule that conference call. Family comes first, before business, even the business of state. March 5th. When is their time? Ruth Bader Ginsburg explained her parenting strategy while she was in law school, at a time when women simply did not do such things. She said, "Our nanny came in at 8 o'clock and left at 4 o'clock. I used the time in between classes to study, to read the next day's assignment. But 4 o'clock was Jane's time. We went to the park, we played games, we sang silly songs. When she went to sleep, I went back to the books. I had to make the most of the time I had. I couldn't waste time." Of course, you're busy. You have work, you have your spouse, you have your kids, you have all the obligations of adulthood. All of these things are important. How do you fit it all in? The truth is, if you're winging it every day, you won't get it all in. Some things will fall by the wayside, and too often it's our time with our kids that is the first to go. Because we can turn on the TV, because we can strap them in the car seat and bring them along on errands, because we can tell them, "Sorry, kiddo, I'm busy right now." This is why it can be a good idea to have very specific scheduled time, so you can be sure that they have their time, non-negotiable time, just as you do with work or anything else that matters to you. What does it say about all of us as parents if what we give them is the leftover time? Nothing good. They are the priority. Remember that the next time you put another new obligation on your calendar. March 6th. This is what putting them first looks like. For his whole career, Archie Manning had been a company man for the New Orleans Saints. He was great, but the team was terrible. For years, they had lost. For years, he had endured poor offensive lines, poor drafting, never even coming close to playoff contention. So you'd think that when he was traded to the Houston Oilers and then to the Minnesota Vikings, it would have been a blessing. It could have breathed new life into his career. He still had years left in him, and now he had a real shot at being a part of a winning team. Finally! But instead, in 1984, he retired. Why? His son Eli. As Manning explained in the book, My First Coach, Inspiring Stories of NFL Quarterbacks and Their Dads, he says, "I sensed that my relationship wasn't quite the same with Eli that it had been with Cooper and Peyton at that age. I was gone and I didn't really like it at all. I remember that was one of the real joys for me when I retired, that I would be home. I would be around full time for Eli." That's what great parenting looks like, what true greatness on and off the field looks like. Would anyone back then have noticed two more seasons with the Vikings? Would anyone now have bothered to remember them? Maybe, maybe not. But you know who definitely noticed? You know who definitely remembers? Eli. He benefited unquestionably and immeasurably from his father's choice. He has a happy family and two Super Bowl victories to show for it. What could it look like if you put your family first? If you really put them ahead of everything else? You can't be exactly sure until you do, but you can be certain it will feel great. March 7th, how are you filling their bank?
Each day of our lives, we make deposits into the memory banks of our children. Charles R. Swindoll.
Think of your own childhood. What do you remember? Is it those big moments, you know, the planned ones, the ones in the calendar? Is it exclusively Christmas mornings, the annual spring break vacations, the 4th of July barbecue? Or are your memories much more mundane? What we remember about growing up are the little moments. We remember sitting in the passenger seat next to Dad on a long drive. We remember going for pizza after soccer practice. We remember waking up from a nap and coming downstairs and watching a football game. We remember that little piece of advice. We remember thinking they were going to be mad at us for something and getting a hug instead. Similarly, the wounds that we feel often come from other small moments. The feeling of being ignored, getting yelled at for leaving our shoes in the living room, the time that mom didn't stand up for us, the unspoken tension in the living room between our parents. Today, you'll be making plenty of these small deposits in their memory banks. How do you want the ledger to read? March 8th, being important isn't an excuse.
I've built an office behind our house. Someday my daughter will look at it and think, that's where my dad worked to provide for us, and feel a little sentimental. What I never hope she thinks is, that's the place my dad loved more than me. Donald Miller.
It would be wonderful if these quotes didn't exist, but they do. They come from the children of great men, from Albert Einstein's son, from Nelson Mandela's daughter, from kids whose dads were presidents or kings or rock stars or CEOs, and they all go something like this. You were there for so many people as part of your job, but you were never there for me. You were the best in the world at everything you did, except for fatherhood. And it's heartbreaking. Obviously, the world needed Nelson Mandela. It needed Eleanor Roosevelt. It needed Steve Jobs. It needed Albert Einstein. What they did was hard and important. It required sacrifice. It came at the expense of their families. It had to. But did it have to come at such a high cost? There is no job, no career, no amount of responsibility that justifies being absent from the lives of your children. Being important, having a calling, achieving success is great. Being important doesn't change what your most important job is, being a parent, being there for them, becoming world class at being mom or dad. Because when your days in the spotlight are over, when your fame and import have receded, you will still be a parent and your kids will still need you for the things that kids have always needed their parents for. March 9th. This is the only success that matters now.
Anytime you feel guilty about not meeting some sort of insane, unachievable demand, ask yourself, does this help me improve my relationship with my children? And does this help my community? Jessica Gross.
All of us, before we were parents, chased success in our own way. Some of us wanted it more than others. Some of us got it. Some of us didn't. Then we had kids. And what did that change? Well, it certainly took up more of our time and energy. It made financial security more important. It made us grow up. But mostly what it did was utterly and irrevocably change our definition of success. As Theodore Roosevelt explained, there are many kinds of success in life worth having. It is exceedingly interesting and attractive to be a successful businessman or a railway man or a farmer or a successful lawyer or doctor or a writer or a president or a ranchman or the colonel of a fighting regiment or to kill grizzly bears and lions. But for unflagging interest and enjoyment, a household of children, if things go reasonably well, certainly makes all other forms of success and achievement lose their importance. By comparison, we will still want to be good at our jobs, of course. We will still want to win championships and land big clients. We want recognition and we want the thrill of the chase. But we know now, because we have felt it, how small these things seem compared to a quiet evening at home, a Sunday in the park, breakfast full of laughter, watching them on a stage, or running on the sidewalk into your arms. This is the only success that matters now. March 10th, welcome to unavoidable reality. When the columnist and author David Brooks's son was born, a friend sent him an email that just said, "Welcome to the world of unavoidable reality." Every dad knows what this means. It captures being a parent perfectly. The biggest change that comes from having a kid isn't financial. It's not the sleep deprivation. It's not even needing to take care of another person or the stress it puts on your relationships. It's that it rudely introduces you to the unavoidable reality that you are no longer the center of your own world, something that you had been, despite what you thought, utterly ignorant of. As an adult, you did what you wanted. Things operated on normal timelines. You made decisions and commitments, and that was it. The world was logical and in your control. Now and for the rest of your life, reality is different. What time are you going to get to the party? When your daughter wakes up from her nap, that's when. They're sick with the flu. You're sick with the flu. They feel like having a tough morning or are reeling from teenage hormones. Looks like you are too. Unavoidable reality means that you are not in control. It means you are going to sit and play in the sandbox for the next 90 minutes because God knows you are not going to risk a tantrum. Unavoidable reality is weekends of soccer games and evenings of school plays and carpooling and school pickups. It means that you can't just skip dinner and grab something on the go. Life doesn't work that way anymore. That's who you are now. That's unavoidable reality. And guess what? It's wonderful. Get used to it. March 11th. It's about being there. A lot.
Don't you think maybe they are the same thing? Love and attention? Greta Gerwig.
How do you get through with your kids? How do you show them what's right? How do you make sure they know how much you care about them? The answer is simple. You can be there. A lot. There's a joke that the word love is actually spelled T-I-M-E. It's true, your kids won't have to wonder, they won't need to ask you or your partner or other people how you feel about them if you are constantly there to show them, if you have prioritized your time with them over everything else. Being there also alleviates the pressure to find the words in those trying moments because you have been having an ongoing, regular conversation with your kids the whole time. The words are there. But being a great parent is not just about those pivotal moments. It's not just about providing for them or getting them into a great school so they can get ahead in life. It's mainly and mostly the day-to-day T-I-M-E. It's the modeling each day of what a good person looks like. It's the showing each time you see them that you care, that they are important, that they are loved. It's about being there a lot. March 12th. They must come first. Queen Elizabeth II had just returned from a six-month trip abroad. Her kids had been on board the royal yacht for days, eagerly awaiting her return. Did she have presents? Would she tell them wonderful stories? Would she smother them with kisses? As she stepped aboard, Prince Charles, the future king, ran to her. Always a stickler for protocol, however, the queen politely greeted a group of dignitaries first. "No, not you, dear," she chided him, finishing her business before embracing her family. Even some 65 years after the fact, even if you have an important job, even if you're an avid rule follower, even if you don't like Charles, it still breaks your heart. Especially when we know that she knew better, having moved her weekly meetings with the prime minister to be there for her babies at dinner time. But now, after so much time apart, those were her first words to her six-year-old? What had changed? Couldn't she see the awful symbolism, literally putting work before family, having already put them on pause for 6 months? Your kids must come first, not just in the very first months or years, but always. You must say to them, "Yes, you, dear," and never the opposite. March 13th. Don't let them steal from your family. A few weeks before his tragic death, Kobe Bryant got a note from a reporter at ESPN. She was working on a story about a moment in Laker history, and she wanted to feature Kobe in it. It was one of those requests that public figures get all the time. It's part of their job. In fact, it's one of the things that attracted them to the job in the first place. To be in the news, to have people want to hear their opinions, to grow their brand. But Kobe replied, "Can't right now. My girls are keeping me busy. Hit me up in a couple weeks." Do you have the discipline to send a message like that? How strong are you at putting your family first? How good are your defenses against the endless requests, the opportunities, the impositions, the obligations that come with your work in particular and with life in general? It's so easy to let people steal your time, to let them take you away from the thing that is keeping you busy, your kids, your family. Kobe Bryant tragically will not get any more time with his kids, and they will not get any more time with him, which is what makes that text he sent such a powerful reminder, a final feat of performance there to inspire those of us who are continuing in the shadow of his death. Put your family first, put your kids first, say that you are too busy. Politely decline. You have other priorities. March 14th. Do you know them? It's a story so bad it has to be true. The second Earl of Leicester was walking down the hallway of his enormous estate. A young nurse holding the hand of a child passed him in the corridor. "Whose child is that?" he asked her. Taken aback, it was all she could do to utter calmly, "Yours, my lord." Needless to say, the Earl died unhappy and mostly alone. Now, thankfully, most of us are not this aloof. No one would accept or condone that kind of absentee parenting anymore, or even just the more benign, aristocratic, hands-off style the British were known for. But still, it begs the question, how well do you know your kids, really? March 15th. Their needs are so modest.
Your kids are not keeping score on your career. They just want a parent who's emotionally present and supportive of them. Ben Stiller.
David Letterman was the king of late night. His shows ran for 33 seasons, making him the longest-serving late-night talk show host in the history of American television. At its peak, he was making something like $30 million a year, watched by an audience of many millions every week. In 2014, Letterman announced that he was hanging it up. On the day he made the decision, Letterman went to his young son, who he had later in life, with the news. "I'm quitting. I'm retiring," he told Harry. "I won't be at work every day. My life is changing. Our lives will change." "Will I still be able to watch Cartoon Network?" his son asked. "I think so. Let me check," Letterman replied. There he was, walking away from millions of dollars and one of the most coveted slots in all of television, and his son's main concern was whether he could still watch TV. Kids will humble us like that. We think we're so important. We think that our work is so important. In fact, that's what we tell ourselves, that we work those long hours to make the money to provide them a certain kind of life. In fact, our kids' needs are so humble. Mostly what they want is us. And beyond that, they're pretty content with snacks, the occasional video game, a sprinkler to play in, some magnet you picked up in the airport on the way home from a business trip, a parent who doesn't yell at them all the time. They're pretty easily impressed, and their needs are small. March 16th. It's not possible without struggle. At an event for female judges in the 1980s during Sandra Day O'Connor's term as the first female Supreme Court justice, a law professor asked, "How do you take care of your family and have a career?" O'Connor answered, "Always put your family first." It was an inspiring answer, but all the trailblazing women in the room understood it was not the full truth. As her biographer wrote, the women in the audience suspected that the real answer to the question was, by constant struggle, by painful choice, and by trade-offs. We can't be flip about it. Putting your family ahead of your ambition is essential, but it's also tough. If it were easy, every parent would do it. Indeed, later in life, O'Connor would talk about how desperately hard it was to balance work and family. She would try to talk to her law clerks, male and female, about this struggle. She didn't dance around how hard it would be. She shared what she had learned, and most important, in being upfront, she provided them and now us the relief of knowing it is not possible without struggle. March 17th, you'll never regret playing with your kids. Even if you've just put on your work clothes, even if you're already late, even if the pool is freezing, even if they've been getting in trouble lately or been difficult to deal with, even If you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders, you will never regret choosing to stop whatever it is that you are doing or were about to do. Play with your kids. You will never regret jumping in the water with them, picking up the video game controller with them, spending a few minutes with them, letting Saturday actually be Saturday with family. You will always be glad you took the time because none of us know how much time we will get. There is no message more important to send than the one that says, "There is nothing more important to me than you." As busy as you are, as much as you are dealing with, there has never been a mind that was not improved or refreshed by temporarily entering the world of a child. But of course, you will regret letting too many of these opportunities pass you by. In fact, you know that you already do, because you already have. March 18th, this is the real dad tax. One of the perks of parenting is the so-called dad tax, the bite of their ice cream, the pieces of their Halloween candy, the biggest pork chop on the serving dish. It's your house and you are bigger, so you get to exact the iron price from your kids anytime you want. The basketball coach John Thompson, who grew up poor in Washington, D.C., recalls that his father always ate whatever he and his siblings left on their plates. But as he got older, he realized that this was a different kind of dad tax, one that his father was paying, not collecting. "Now I realize that the man must have been hungry, but sacrificed so we could have more than him," Thompson wrote in his memoirs. "Was I so selfish that I didn't realize the reason he chewed on that pork chop bone I left behind? Why he sopped up the gravy on my plate? My father was providing. He didn't eat so that we could eat." Putting your family first isn't just a matter of your schedule. The author Simon Sinek famously wrote that leaders eat last. So should dads, because the inherent, unquestionable responsibility that you assumed the minute you brought a child into this world is that they come first. They get the bulk of what's available. They don't get the biggest pork chop. They get as many pork chops as they need. They get to experience the fun and the sweetness of life. And if there are any leftovers, even if it's just the scraps, then maybe you get a taste. March 19th. Don't do this to them. When she was a young girl, Angela Merkel's father was gone a lot. He had to travel to see his congregation. He had meetings and church business to attend to. Like all of us, he was busy. He had work responsibilities, spiritual responsibilities, adult responsibilities. And it took a toll on his family. The worst was when he said he'd be right back, Merkel later reflected. But then it took hours for him to return. Often she would find herself waiting for hours in the street, expecting him home at any minute, always to be disappointed. All of us do this in some form or another. "It'll just be a minute," we tell them as we run an errand. "Just let me finish this phone call real quick," we say as we shush them over and over again while they beg us to play outside. "Dinner will be ready soon," we say, knowing it will be much longer than that. "I'll be home before it gets dark, I promise," we say, as if traffic could not delay us. Or like Merkel's father, our trips and travels get extended and we miss things, or we keep them waiting. While none of us fully control our time or our schedule, we do control how we communicate with our children. We control how we give our word and how we keep it. And it's essential that we take that seriously. Our kids shouldn't be expected to just deal with it. They should be communicated to and informed with respect. They deserve an explanation for the things that keep us away from them, that keep them away from the things that it is our adult responsibility to provide. It's a matter of duty, to be sure, but more important, it's a matter of trust. March 20th. They're only going to ask you so many times.
Sometimes you will never know the value of a moment until it becomes a memory. Dr. Seuss.
They're only going to ask you so many times to get in the pool with them, sit next to them, help with their homework, to talk about the problem that they're having. Not because you only get a certain number of summers or car rides, moments with your kids, though that is true, they're only going to ask you so many times because at some point they're going to get the message. Dad is too busy. He isn't fun anymore. Mom judges. She isn't actually a good person to ask that message. So you can't defer the opportunity to answer till later. You can't afford to lose your temper because this is the ninth time they've asked. You can't give anything less than your best, your most present, your most fun self, because this ask, this moment is it. It's your chance. You can't waste it. You can't send them the wrong message. You have to seize it. You have to show them who you are. March 21st, if you want your children to turn out well. Seneca called wealth a preferred indifferent. It's not good or bad, but it's nice to have. And he was right. Money does make some things better. Certainly better to have money than not to have it. But it's a mistake to think that money will magically create a wonderful childhood for your kids. It's not true that money will guarantee your kids a good life. It's not true that it will prevent them from feeling pain or loss. And it's not true that money is even high on their list of needs. What kids actually want is you. What kids actually need is you. As Dear Abby quite brilliantly put it in a column way back in the 1950s, if you want your children to turn out well, spend twice as much time with them and half as much money. You can't pay someone to be there for your kids. You can't pay someone to do the job that only you can do. Sure, money can make things easier. It can buy childcare and tutors, but it will never be as important as what you can provide by being hands-on, by being a good example, by showing them that you care for them and value them. The proof of this? Just think about how many great people turned out just fine without much money at all. March 22nd, they are your work.
When you love, you wish to do things for. You wish to sacrifice for. You wish to serve. Ernest Hemingway.
All of us are busy. We all have conflicting responsibilities and a lot to manage besides that. Still, we can't ever forget what our real job is. As the economist Brian Kaplan tells his children, all four of whom he now homeschools, you are not an interruption of my work. You are my work. Our job is to raise great kids, or more precisely, our job is to raise great adults. This time that we spend with our kids, whether it's homeschooling or watching a TV show on the couch, it is not a distraction from our work. It is the work. Really important work. Who could really view their life as successful if they were famous but their kids were struggling? Who would truly be happy accepting a Nobel Prize, knowing that they had failed as a parent? What good would $1 billion be if all of the money in the world can't convince your kids to come home for the holidays? That's why kids can never take away from our careers or hold us back. It's not possible for them to interrupt our work because they are our work. March 23rd, you are the exalted creator. Whatever you have accomplished or hope to accomplish, there is something you will never be able to top. As the Catholic activist and possible future saint Dorothy Day wrote, if I had written the greatest book, composed the greatest symphony, painted the most beautiful painting, or carved the most exquisite figure, I could not have felt the more exalted creator than I did when they placed my child in my arms. No human creature could receive or contain so vast a flood of love and joy as I felt after the birth of my child. With this came the need to worship, to adore. That feeling, the one that you felt on the first day you held your children, that feeling when they run into your arms and call you daddy, or when they come into your room to ask for advice, or when you sit across the table from them and watch them eat. That feeling, that pride, that love, that connection, that is the feeling to carry with you. You made that. You are the exalted creator of that. Parent in a way that proves it. March 24th, give what you didn't get. NFL wide receiver Marquise Lee didn't play football in 2020. He could have played for Bill Belichick, but he didn't. Not because he was worn down or afraid of the grind. As an athlete and a football player, he was in the prime of his career. No, he opted out of that season because, as it did for so many, COVID-19 disrupted everything. Sports, like business, involves travel and time at the office, away from family. But with COVID-19 protocols and limited access to family and friends on the road, the NFL season was different. It would have been too much time away for Lee, more than he was willing to bear. As he told ESPN, people who know my background and where I come from and things like that, I didn't really have my pops in my life. I never really had a real father figure besides coaches as I got older. And this is my opportunity to be there for my daughter, he said. I was hoping she could be there watching this season, but clearly she wasn't going to be able to do that. I felt like it was important to just spend this year with her and get back to it next year. Football is going to be there at the end of the day, he said. Lee was putting his family first. He was doing something his father didn't do for him. He was drawing a line. He was deciding not to waste the most precious thing we have with our children, time. Each of us must decide the same. March 25th. Why didn't you make time for me?
Not to be always ducking my responsibilities to the people around me because of pressing business. Marcus Aurelius.
I hope you are quite well, a young Winston Churchill wrote to his always busy father from his boarding school in 1886. You never came to see me on Sunday when you were in Brighton. It's not the only time he would write such a thing to his father. I cannot think why you didn't come to see me while you were in Brighton, he wrote. I was very disappointed, but I suppose you were too busy. As Josh Ireland observes in the fascinating book Churchill and Son, it's not just the disappointment of the boy that registers all these years later, but also his sad attempts to rationalize his father's selfishness. We will not be perfect as parents. We will make mistakes, but we must do our best to avoid inspiring that painful question. Why didn't you make time for me? Because there is no good answer for it. And the rationalizing answer they come up with has the potential to mess with their minds and redouble the damage of our absence. Your kids don't care that you're president. They don't care that this is the busy sales season. They don't care that your own parents are sick. They don't care that you were fighting over custody. They just care that you weren't there. Time is not given. It is made. We have to make time. That's our job. It's our biggest priority. March 26th. Here's what you mean to them. Sean Lennon, the only son of John Lennon and Yoko Ono, had to grow up without a father. Tragically, John Lennon was assassinated outside his New York City apartment building when Sean was just 5 years old. Still, it was those few years that Sean got to spend with his father that shaped him into the man he became. In an interview with Marc Maron, Sean explained that on an almost daily basis, someone will come up to him and say something to the effect of, "You have no idea what your dad meant to me. You can't understand how important your dad's music is to me." It's a strange claim, Sean explained, because of course he understands. John Lennon and his music are even more important in Sean's life because John Lennon was Sean's father. Because he had been holding on to that relationship every minute since his father was taken from him. Because John's music is the only way he gets to talk to his son anymore. Each parent should take to heart what that means. Even the greatest musician of all time is more important as a parent to his children than he is as an artist to the world. It doesn't matter how great our work is, how wealthy it makes us, or what it ends up meaning to billions of people. Nothing will eclipse the impact we have on our kids. March 27th. It's okay to be ambitious. You have things you want to do in this life. Maybe you want to write a book, or you're in the middle of starting a company. Maybe you're trying to win a championship or run for president. But you want to be a great parent too, obviously, which necessarily makes your other goals more difficult to achieve. Is this a moral quandary, a Sophie's choice? Is it possible to yearn for personal achievement and desire to be a great parent and expect to accomplish both? Or does one, as the stories of Justice Ginsburg and Justice O'Connor's early career might remind us, require sacrifice from the other? For most of history, it's been women who have felt the tension of these conflicting desires the most and have been forced to choose one over the other. Fathers, on the other hand, have been encouraged, expected even to look outside the home for fulfillment and recognition, because for men, professional success was good parenting. As society has evolved, however, every parent has had to manage the tension of serving two masters, even prime ministers and billionaires. In her autobiography, Margaret Thatcher, the first woman to be the UK prime minister, she quotes Irene Ward, a pioneering British politician, "While the home must always be the center of one's life, it should not be the boundary of one's ambition." You're allowed to think bigger. It's okay to have a career and want to be great at it. It's okay to strive to change the world, because in these things, as long as you share them and you open them up to a wider view, you are teaching your kids about you and about the world. You are teaching them about hard work, about doing what's right, about fulfilling one's potential and being of use to others. March 28th. It's a family affair. Taylor Branch's incredible series on Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement spans 3 volumes. It's almost 3,000 pages with hundreds of footnotes. It's won awards like the Pulitzer Prize for Nonfiction and a National Book Critics Circle Award. Undoubtedly, Branch is quite pleased with this masterwork of historical scholarship, which he spent untold hours researching, writing, editing, and talking about. But there is a note tucked away in the acknowledgments of the final volume that truly captures both the experience and the family effort such an achievement requires. Branch writes, "Our son Franklin, who was born weeks before my first trip to the Lorraine Motel, finished college in time to help me with my final research." Your kids are with you on this journey, whatever it is. It can be so easy to see your career as something that is you-centric, but it's not. It's a family affair. The same is true of the ambitions of every member in your household. And the more you can be involved with each other on these personal journeys, the better. It makes the accomplishment sweeter, the work more complete, and the sacrifices less painful, because all of them have been done together. March 29th. Here's how to spend more time with them. Every parent wishes they could have more time with their kids. We envy the parents who don't seem to have this problem, who don't work the same hours we do, who have the flexibility we dream about to spend more time with their kids. If we could only be so lucky. The comedian Aziz Ansari tells a joke about a conversation he had with the musician Frank Ocean. Marveling at the autonomy Ocean seems to have in his career, Aziz asks how he gets away with making music only when he wants to, touring only when he wants to, doing only the kinds of things he wants. "It's not that hard," Ocean tells him. "You just have to be comfortable making less money." If we're being honest, how much of the time we spend away from our kids for work is actually related to putting food on the table? How much of it is truly rooted in need, in the basics of a healthy, sustainable life? Probably not nearly as much as we tell ourselves or them. We work for other reasons, often good reasons, but not because we have to. We could have more flexibility if we wanted. We could choose a different job. We could choose to put family over career advancement, over 6 or 7-figure salaries, over keeping up with the Joneses. Let us stop acting as if the freedom and the opportunity we crave is not already in our grasp. We can spend more time with our kids. We can be there more than we are. We just have to be comfortable making less money. March 30th, an important rule. The economist Russ Roberts lives his life by a number of rules and rituals. He keeps Shabbat, for instance, and he commits to regularly tithing his income. He has another rule as a father that we should all observe as parents. If your child offers you a hand to hold it, he says, take it. Life and relationships are an endless dance of reaching out and pulling away. You reach out to your kids, they pull away. They're busy. They're in front of their friends. They're mad at you. You try to help them and they don't want it. You want what's best for them, but they don't understand. We can't control that. What we can control is that whenever they do reach out, whenever they offer us a hand to hold, that we take that opportunity and we grab it. When they want to lie in our bed with us, we can let them. When they call on the phone, we could answer, even if we're in a meeting. When they ask to talk about something, we can listen, whatever it's about. We can hold them tight every chance that we get. We can't demand that those things happen, but we can make a rule that when we do, we take it for as long as it's being given. March 31st. This must be the top priority. What does it actually look like to put family first? It looks like Ricky Rubio letting it be known publicly that his professional basketball career will be over before anyone expects. The NBA star said, "When my son starts school, the NBA will not be worth it. I will have to go back to Spain. I don't want to make him dizzy moving around when he's 6 years old at the age of starting to make friends. It was discussed with my wife, and we have it very clear. There will be a time when basketball will not be the priority." Will he follow through on this? Is our career inherently at odds with being a good parent? That's for him and for each of us to decide. Still, at some point, our kids must come first. We must do what's best for them. We must sacrifice for them. We must give them the life that they deserve, a life with us in it. Your career is important, but family is forever. It must be the top priority. April. Master your emotions. Lessons in patience and self-control. April 1st. Always grab the right handle.
Every event has two handles, one by which it can be carried and one by which it can't. If your brother does you wrong, don't grab it by his wronging, because this is the handle incapable of lifting it. Instead, use the other, that he is your brother, that you were raised together, and then you will have hold of the handle that carries. Epictetus.
Each day, possibly hundreds of times per day, you are presented with situations that you have to deal with. A kid who lied to you about doing their homework, a wife who snapped at you, a car that's got to be taken for an oil change, a boss with their head up their ass, grandparents whom your kids love but drive you nuts, a family you've got to get to the airport 2 hours before takeoff. How will you react? Will you get angry, pull away, argue, hold a grudge? Or will you take a deep breath, have some empathy, apologize, let go a little bit? Don't be such a control freak. Every day, every situation, there is a choice. Which handle will we grab? Which handle will we show our kids how to grab? The easy one or the right one?